Okay. Please sit back, take a couple of big, deep breaths, and join with me in this powerful consciousness, knowing that spiritual wisdom is already here. It is everywhere in this room. Individually and collectively, we have come together today by divine appointment to open our minds, open our hearts, to allow our souls to be nurtured, knowing that we hear whatever we need to hear. Wherever healing is required, the truth is revealed. And we now are open and receptive, including every other house of worship, every culture, every person, every church. And we extend a warm hand in friendship, knowing that there's just one heart, one mind, one power, of which we are all the perfect expression of. So today we celebrate spiritual wisdom. And in that spiritual wisdom, we recognize that we have the ability and the capability to do all that we desire to do if we are willing to apply the principle, practice the principle, and use that powerful, wonderful muscle called discipline. So we are grateful to be here together at this time and in this perfect moment. So we release this, we now let it be, and together we say, and so it is. So our theme this month has been intention, the nuts and bolts of the teaching. And this month we have explored the fundamental concepts of science of mind, as well as some of the various writings of Ernest Holmes, the founder of science of mind. But today we're going to conclude this by exploring where Dr. Holmes got some of his ideas and look at applying that wisdom. How many of you have the textbook? Okay, great. Okay, so I'm going to refer to it a lot today. So if you don't have it, you might want to get it afterward. You might want to go home and dust it off and look through it. But Dr. Holmes said this about the philosophy of science of mind. He said, it's nothing new to the world. It's rather a synthesis of the greatest concepts that have ever come to the mind of man. The law of Moses, the love of Christ, the ethics of Buddha, the morals of Confucius, and the deep spiritual realizations of the Hindus. The mystical revelations of the saints of the Middle Ages, the laws of parallels and compensation of Emerson, the logic of Kant, the spirituality of Swedenborg, the beauty of Browning, and the wide universal sweep of Walt Whitman all find an exalted place in the philosophy of religious science. I have never had a revelation, final or otherwise, and the knowledge I've acquired was here on earth when I arrived and will be available after I've shuffled off. Wherever you find truth, it belongs to everybody. So today we're going to look at three truths taught in Science of Mind, which are the same three truths that are taught by the mystics of the ages. But before we do that, I want to clarify the meaning of mystic. And before looking into what mysticism means, I want to look at what it doesn't mean. So mysticism is not magic. It is not clairvoyance. It is not psychic experiences. Nor does it necessarily mean having revelations or visions. Webster describes mysticism as the experience of union or direct communion with ultimate reality. The belief that direct knowledge of God, spiritual truth, or ultimate reality can be attained through subjective experience, one's intuition and one's insight. The word mystic itself comes from an ancient Greek word, mystikos, meaning the closing of the eyes or secret. Engaging in mysticism means then to close our physical eyes so that the soul may see with the inner eye of spiritual realization. So a mystic is someone who believes with No doubt and no hesitancy, no need to necessarily change anything, that he or she lives and moves and has his or her being in God, and therefore believes that he or she can, in fact, has had a direct communion with God, like many of us have. Dr. Holmes goes on to say, a mystic is not a mysterious person, but is one who has a deep inner sense of life, of her unity with the whole. A mystic is one who intuitively perceives truth and without mental process arrives at spiritual realization. Some of the great mystics of the ages are prophets, such as the Buddha, David, Solomon, Moses, Jesus, Mohammed, philosophers such as Plato, Emerson, Holmes himself, and then many spiritual leaders and theologians, all the way from the Christian German mystic Meister Eckhart to the Dalai Lamas through the ages. Ryokan, the Zen Buddhist monk who lived most of his life as a hermit, said, in all the 10 directions of the universe, there's really only one truth. When we see clearly, the great teachings are all the same. And isn't that the truth? Nothing new under the sun. We've all heard this. We just keep hearing it maybe in different languages. But three of those teachings are really summed up in our textbook. And what I'd like us to do this morning is to look at them and then actually apply them to daily living. The truth one is that all the mystics sensed that we live in one life. In him we live and move and have our being. The unity of good is a revelation of the greatest importance, for it actually teaches us that we are one with the whole, or put slightly differently, the mystics have recognized the absolute unity of God and man, and they've told us of marvelous relationships which exist between God and man, of a very close unity which cannot ever be broken. So truth number two, the great mystics have all agreed that our lives that we have are ours to choose. We have complete dominion how we choose to run our lives. When we turn to the one, they say that we will always find inspiration from on high. Truth three, they've all agreed that the soul is on the pathway of experience. That pathway of experience is what we know very well, and it's called self-discovery, something that we all go through as we get into this teaching. Sometimes it's a pretty daunting experience to actually discover the self. And that is said then, that the self is actually on its way back to the Father's house. The first truth that all the mystics have known is that the universe has to be one, and therefore we are one with God. Now Jesus said, a house divided against itself cannot stand. He was describing the oneness. Then he also said, he who hath seen me hath seen the Father. So we could say that Jesus arrived very early on at the perception of oneness, and then he kept attempting to teach that. Meister Eckhart said, God is nearer to me than I am to my own self. My life depends upon God's being near me. He is also present in a stone or a log of wood, only they don't know it. In the Gospel of Thomas, at saying 77, Jesus said, I am the light that is over all things. I am all. From me all came forth, and to me all attained. Split a piece of wood, and I'm there. Lift up a stone, and you will also find me there. God was once described as that whose center is everywhere, and whose circumference is nowhere. I looked at this statement and I said, if its center is everywhere, then the center is here, and then the center is over there, and the center is over there, and the center is over here, and also back there. So there's no way around where this is. There's nothing that can separate us from this power unless we decide to move. And then if we move back from the power, many times we feel a little bit out of sorts, or many times we feel a little off balance. But each living soul is a center of God. I know these just sound like words, but when you really, really allow yourself to get the fact that each of you individually are a center of God, I think remembering that when things might be going bump in the night is a very empowering thing to remember. Perhaps in the course of the day and in our busy lives, we forget to remember that God is at the center of me and I am at the center of God. But it's very important in this teaching to really understand that. And then the next step, of course, is to apply it. But that is the overriding concept that we all have to get. And not just get it in our heads, but we have to move it to a deeper level, into our heart, or what the mystics would say, at a mystical level. We need to talk about it often so that we can get it at that deeper level. Because when we really, really get it, we will be reborn into a brand new existence. We will move to a much higher level of insight and clarity. I'm sure we get glimpses of it, but because our practice isn't necessarily that disciplined or that dedicated, we may not get the degree to which that power is within us to use. The tendency, of course, is to step outside of ourselves and use some other power, or to think that there is some other power outside of ourselves. But the truth is, it's within us. A second truth that the mystics have taught us after that we are one with God is that, as Holmes said, our life is ours to do with as we choose. That's a tough one, because it doesn't always look like that, does it? It looks like there might be other things that have power over our lives, or other things that are mixed up there. But the truth is that this is really ours. Within this oneness and this unity, we are individuals with unique character, each with our own talents and skills and a personality and that wonderful thing called free will. As we move forward in life, we understand that will isn't so free after all, that coming with that free will is a big responsibility. But each one of us is a unique and individualized center in God and an expression of God. It is such an important thing for us to understand. Here is perhaps a little story that might help us to understand this, and that might illustrate what I mean when I say a unique and individualized expression of God. So sit back, take a couple of deep breaths, because this is just a little story. The day finally has arrived and Forrest Gump dies and goes to heaven. He's at the pearly gates, however, the gates are closed. And Forrest approaches the gatekeeper. The gatekeeper said, "Well, Forrest, it is certainly good to see you. We've heard a lot about you. I must tell you, though, that the place is really filling up. We've been administering an entrance exam now for everyone. The test is short, but you have to pass it before you can get into heaven." Forrest responds,
"It sure here be good to be here, sir. But nobody ever told me about any entrance exam. I sure hope the test ain't too hard. Life was a big enough test as it was."
The gatekeeper continued, "Yes, I know, Forrest, but the test is only 3 questions. First, what 2 days of the week begin with the letter T? Second, how many seconds are there in a year? Third, what is God's first name?" Forrest leaves to think the question over. He returns the next day and sees St. Peter, who waves him up and says, "Now that you've had a chance to think the questions over, tell me your answer."
"Well, the first one, which 2 days in the week begins with the letter T, Shucks, that will be today and tomorrow.
The gatekeeper's eyes opened wide and he exclaimed, Forrest, that is not what I was thinking. But you do have a point, and I guess I didn't specify, so I'll have to give you credit for the answer. Now, how about the next one? How many seconds are there in a year?
Now, that one is harder. But I think about it, and I guess the only answer could be 12.
Astounded, the gatekeeper said, 12? 12, Forrest, how in heaven's name could you come up with 12 seconds in a year?
Shucks, there's got to be 12. January 2nd, February 2nd, March 2nd.
Hold it, interrupts the gatekeeper. I see where you're going with this, and I see your point, though that was not quite what I had in mind. But I will have to give you credit for that one, too. Now let's go on to the third and the final question. Can you tell me God's first name?
Sure, it's Andy.
Andy? Exclaimed the exasperated and frustrated gatekeeper. Okay, I can understand how you came up with the answers to my earlier questions, but just how in the world did you come up with the name Andy as the first name of God?
Shucks, that was the easiest one of all. I learned it from the song. Andy walks with me, Andy talks with me, Andy tells me I'm his own.
The gatekeeper opened the pearly gates and said, run, Forrest, run!
Mama,
Forrest, please come
Mama.
Out! Come out, wherever you are!
Mama!
Yes, Forrest?
Forrest, where are you?
I got to go now.
He ran. He literally ran.
That's all I'm going to do about that.
Okay, so we are... Thank you. Thank you very much. Thanks, Todd. So we are separate beings with our own choices and our own ability to decide our own gifts and our own talents, as well as, don't we have our own challenges and our own obstacles, right? Even you own those because your challenges and obstacles are not like somebody else's challenges and obstacles. When we turn to the one, when we turn to the power within us, we always will receive that inspiration. It's just that sometimes we forget to turn within, and I think that we turn without. And if you don't go within, you literally do go without. Sometimes, at least in my experience maybe, it takes a crisis for us to turn to the one, right? Sometimes it takes a crisis in life before we like fall to our knees and yell help. But whatever it takes to awaken, remember something. Our spiritual expansion and our evolution is rarely preceded by a good day. It rarely is preceded by a good day. Usually, there is something in life that has taken place, and that is how we sometimes then go within to that secret place of the Most High where we find we are inspired. The third truth that the mystics have taught us is that, again, to quote Ernest Holmes, the soul is on the pathway of experience, that is, of self-discovery. It is on its way back to the Father's house. And that means that in our unique and in our individualized way, our true purpose in life is simply to awaken to who we truly are. I don't think there is any big prize about purpose. I think it's to awaken to who we truly, truly are. The first definition of mysticism I shared this morning earlier was the experience of union or direct communion with ultimate reality. Ultimate reality would, of course, be the God center, that expression of us, that power of us that is the absolute core of our being. The mystics of the ages simply experienced a direct communion with the infinite. Their relationship was so intimate with their God being that nothing ever separated them. The mysticism about it is that all they did was they knew the truth, and then they practiced the truth. Now, what do we mean by the truth? We mean by the truth that which is not arguable, that which just is the truth. The laws of gravity. That's just the truth. The principles that we live by, that's just the truth. And then if you want to take that down to the individual self, you certainly all know the truth. Now, there used to be a time, I don't know if people are still saying this or doing this, but people used to say, well, let me tell you my truth. But see, what that really means is let me tell you my opinion. Let me tell you my point of view. Let me tell you my perception. But you see, that's not the truth. Somewhere there's always the truth. Yes, we have perceptions. Yes, we have perspectives. Yes, we have opinions. Yes, we have particular points of view, but it does not mean it is the truth. That's something for us to always grow into, always be left to. What is really the truth? We're here to become mystics, truly. To become mystics and to have mystical experiences, to have that intuitive insightfulness that oftentimes many of you, I'm sure, have had. But to move to a mystical place in our lives is to live in a way that actually has an open invitation to wisdom. An open invitation to wisdom. Now, sometimes that means we have to do more than come to our spiritual centers or our churches on Sunday and listen to concepts and ideas, although that's certainly important and very helpful on our journey. It may mean that we need to do more than read the writings of the great mystics and other great teachers, also very beneficial. It might mean more than taking classes, also that's very, very beneficial. But if all we do is listen and read and study and never change the way that we live our lives, we will not awaken. We will not awaken until we choose and decide to live in another way. All it takes is an intention and a commitment to do so. The universe will figure out how that's all going to happen. It takes your commitment. It takes you planting that seed that, you know what? I love my life. Everything is great about it. But this is what I'd like to change. And you plant certain seeds. All the reading in the world will not move us forward on a spiritual path. I love reading books. I think they're very important. I think they're a tool, extremely supportive. But without applying, without practicing, and without experiencing these teachings in our daily lives, it just becomes something hypothetical or psychobabble. You just sort of learn how to speak it, or it's very hypothetical. I think it's tempting just to read and just to study rather than rolling up your sleeves and practicing a principle. Today, right now, we can all be on a mystical path. We all ought to be on a mystical path. And maybe that's why what's going on in the world is going on in the world. So we will stop looking outside of ourselves. So we will begin now to look within where the power really resides and where we can become more and more empowered. But we have to live a life where there's an open invitation for wisdom. We can all awaken and we can all become enlightened, and it can last for a minute or so. But that isn't what we need. We need everlasting enlightenment. We need it to last for some time. And the only way it will last is if we begin to apply it in a very consistent and disciplined manner. We can all transform darkness into light when we begin to live in a way that invites wisdom. Some of the greatest wisdom is in scriptures. The problem is you have to sort of read 10 or 20 pages before you find them. But there's a reason that those kinds of books were written. I think probably the greatest wisdom is in Psalms when it says, "Be still and know that I am God." Be still and know that I am God. That's what we've been talking about all morning. You are at one with the one, with the one power that created you. Here's some good news and maybe not such good news. None of the other stuff really matters, except if you say so. None of this other stuff really matters. It's just stuff. What really matters in the middle of a crisis? What really matters? The street you live on? The kind of car you drive? How much money you have in the bank? What really matters when there's a crisis is, where do I go and where do I reach so that I feel as though I'm not going to just crumble? And that is not outside of us. There won't be much comfort going out to sit in your new car. We have to look so much deeper than we've ever looked before. Not counting on our own flesh and bones. Meister Eckhart said, "No one can know God who has not first known himself." That's why it's self-discovery. He says, go to the depths of the soul, the secret place, to the roots, to the heights, for all that God can do is focused there. God doesn't live here. That's not God. That's just your intellectual mind. God lives here, in this place here. That place we don't want to exercise so much. In the feeling, creative mind. The Dalai Lama said that true enlightenment is nothing but the nature of one's own self just being fully realized. Whatever it is we are searching for, it's already here. You already have it. It's already within you. You just haven't looked. Jesus said it thousands of years ago. Hey, stop looking. The kingdom of God is within. That's it. Aren't you all looking for the kingdom? Sure, the kingdom of success, the kingdom of relationships, the kingdom of health, the kingdom of some creation. Everyone is searching for some sort of a kingdom. Instead, look here and start recognizing who you really are and the power that you really have. Jesus said, go into the chamber, into the closet. Go to the inner chamber of the self. We will have mystical experiences if we will be willing to tap into and apply spiritual wisdom. When we live in such a way that invites understanding. Not just hearing about it, not just reading about it, not just studying it. Tuning within to invite it in and then apply it. Unfortunately, we can't stay the same and grow. We can't stay the same and grow at the same time. The only way to change is by changing your perception, or certainly changing your understanding. That can happen when we connect with spiritual wisdom. within your own heart. But it can't happen when we are so disconnected and we are so mesmerized and hypnotized by what's happening outside of ourselves. Oh, I know it's tempting. I get it. It's very tempting. And it's even more tempting to figure out all kinds of fancy ways as how we might fix all of this. But just as Holmes said to us, first discover the self. First discover what's making you click and tick. Then you can go outside of yourself and decide about a solution. But we've hardly even met ourselves. We've hardly even become at peace within ourselves, let alone peace in the world. I think the world offers us so many questions that we answer from our head, from our intellect, from the past. But rarely does the world give us anything that causes us to look into our hearts. And even looking into our hearts sometimes has a bad name, because God forbid you should be too emotional. So perhaps we've just decided, let's just not feel. Let's just pretend that we can have anything that we want. Let's just work the law of attraction and know that our talents and skills and abilities and dreams will all be fulfilled. Well, I have news for you. That could happen, but certainly not until you believe it, and certainly not until you connect with something much more powerful within yourself than something outside of yourself. And certainly not until you recognize, just as the mystics did, you are at one with the One. Yes, you are an individualized expression of the infinite. And yes, that is a responsibility. And yes, that does take practice and application and discipline. And it also takes integrity, and it also takes honor. That's the work. I don't like to give people the idea that this is just a get rich, fast, or quick sort of proposition. Nor do I want people to think that this is drudgery. There's nothing more beautiful in your life than for you to discover you. But somehow that gets set aside, and we start deciding to discover other people and what they're doing or not doing. Sometimes we need to look at where it is we're looking. Where is it I'm looking? And then to be really honest about what is it I'm attached to. Is it other people's tantrums? Other people's agendas? Guilt, disappointment, anger, yours or somebody else's? Are you focusing on what you think should be rather than what actually is? Because if we're focusing on what you think should be, you're resisting what is, and that makes you stuck. Because how does it go? What you resist persists. So if I'm saying, well, this just isn't good enough, this just isn't right the way that it is, then I'm in a state of resistance. I need to move to a state of non-resistance and say, you know, this isn't perfect, but this is my life the way that it is right now. Gee, I must have chosen it. I seem to be here. You know that one common thing, everything that happens in your life, you're always there. I know it was a shock to me too. It was like, oh my God, I'm here again and this is happening. I think that's the lesson. I think that's the infinite saying, I told you where to look. Right? It's the same lesson over and over and over and over and over again. It just looks different each time. And many people, many of you in this room have told me the same thing. One thing you say afterward, you talking to me? That's one thing I hear. And then the second thing is, huh, I'm pretty sure that I've had this lesson before. I'm pretty sure that I healed this thing with my parents. And here it is again. A different face, different circumstance, different situation. So what are we focusing on? What should be rather than what is? It doesn't mean that we don't have dreams and we don't have desires and we don't have vision. Applying spiritual wisdom requires a commitment to self-discovery. That's the first commitment. It's not the commitment to, like I thought when I came in here, I can't wait till when I'm going to walk on water. I can't wait till that day when I'm going to arrive and say, oh my God, I'm spiritually enlightened. I said that more than 3 decades ago. I'm still waiting. And you know what? It's just the same consistent things over and over again. But with each layer of new self-discovery, it does feel like a different person. It's like, oh, I've reacted a little bit differently. I am making strides. Yahoo! How many of you react? How many of you react sometimes and think, oh my God, why did I do that? And how many of you are really getting good at responding instead of reacting? That you like say, whoa, okay, I could have gone there, but I decided to go here. Give yourselves a hand for that. Those are the things in self-discovery. You have to say to yourself, wow, yeah, give yourselves a hand. Good work. You know, I loved Anthony DiMello. He's passed away. He was a Jesuit priest, but really of the most, I want to say, honest kind. He was an author and a great mystic. And he said something that I've never forgotten. He said, approval, appreciation, and attention is a state of dependency. Approval, appreciation, and attention is a state of dependency. The drug of choice for way too many. Think about it. You ever seeking approval? Are you ever looking for appreciation? Are you ever doing things to get attention? He says it's a drug. It's a drug of choice for way too many people. He goes on to say, you know, it can actually become more important than freedom. Will I get what I want from them? Will I not get what I want from them? That's what happens when we focus on things like approval, appreciation, and attention. We're looking to get something. He said, wisdom is not about experience. It isn't something acquired. Wisdom is not applying yesterday's illusions to today's problems. Wisdom is to be sensitive to this situation, to this person, uninfluenced by any carryover from the past. All right. In the classic book, Secret of the Ages, how many of you read that book by Robert Collier, Secret of the Ages? Okay, it's a great, great, classic book. He proposed these questions in the book. Where shall wisdom be found, and where is the place of understanding? Our final word this morning is going to be his answer to those two questions. And this is truly the answer to it all. Acquaint now thyself with God and be at peace. That is where spiritual wisdom is. Thank you and God bless. Okay, sit back. Take a couple of big deep breaths. We recognize one mind, one power, one presence, the strength and the power in that presence. We ask that full functioning power of spirit to come forth, to guide us through this week, to take us to a deeper place, that mystical place, where we recognize that we are one with the one, that we do have a choice of how to live life, and then to recognize that the joyous journey is one of self-discovery. And discovering that God self is the great pleasure. The kingdom is within. We no longer are searching outside, but reaching deep within. That inner reach allows outer manifestation. So every desire, every goal, every intention, every commitment, We know that the power in this room right now supports each one of you in accomplishing all your endeavors with grace and with ease. Let us release a belief in suffering, efforting, or struggling. And let's accept right now that it already is done and complete. That we see it, we feel it, we sense it, that we can imagine it, and trust that this infinite creative mind knows exactly what to do and how to do it. As the rain cometh down from heaven and returneth not thither, but watereth the earth, and maketh it bring forth in bud, that it may give seed to the sower and bread to the eater. So shall my word be that goeth forth out of my mouth, shall not return unto me void, but it shall accomplish that which I please, and it shall prosper in the thing whereto I sent it. And so it is.